let's go on.
Hey, Ron.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Mary Charlotte.
Let us know.
We have some thank yous.
Yes,
yeah, okay. Hi, Mary Charlotte. Hi. Remember me?
Ron Bloomberg is here with us. We are on a very tight schedule today. Let's thank the people who called and made a pledge.
Well, Jonathan Sandemel called. He repaired your computer.
Yes, Dotfoil Computer Services. They are the gods
of
computers.
And Sloan Cunningham called, and
thank
we want to thank her.
Too.
What a great name.
A great animal
Isn't
lover.
It a great name?
Yeah,
is that
really
a man
is.
Or a woman? I don't know. Sloan.
I think
what
it
is
could
that?
Be either one.
Either one. Okay.
Mary Charlotte, hi. This is Cheryl.
Hi, Cheryl. And let's go on. I'm delighted now to welcome Deborah Madison. She is a renowned chef and the author of many cookbooks and countless articles on food. And her latest book with her husband, Patrick McFarlane, is called What We Eat When We Eat Alone. Welcome.
Thank you.
And now, we've talked about this before on the radio, but I just could not resist talking about it again because you are going to be at the New Mexico Women Authors Book Festival and you will be giving a presentation at 3 in the afternoon this coming Saturday. This book is, I really think, one of the funniest books I've seen in a long time.
Well, good.
It's this whole question of what we eat when we eat alone. It brings out, it's almost like people coming out of the closet.
Well, we noticed that when we interviewed people, they couldn't wait to tell us what they eat when they eat alone. I mean, we didn't even ask the question. We just said we were working on this project. Well, let me tell you what I do. People are very eager to talk about that for some reason, regardless of what they answer.
Your husband Patrick's drawings and illustrations are so funny, but what's even funnier is that they're pretty much all from reality.
Well, yeah, they and the recipes both are very much driven by the people we talked to. We didn't just sit down and kind of think things up and then get it to fit. But one person said, for example, well, I always start with the oldest vegetables first. And Patrick had this image of old vegetables on walkers and in stretchers and, you know, wrinkled carrots and, you know, feeble asparagus. And I don't think that would have come to him if somebody hadn't said that and he just hadn't heard, oh, old vegetables, and image really came.
Well, I can understand that because, of course, I have sometimes buy fruits and then they sit there for a while and they start to look a little bit unhappy. So I just put them all in the blender and make a nice fruit juice and they're fine.
There you go. There's a solution.
But there's one which shows a young man launching a bag of frozen peas through the air into a boiling pot on the stove.
Right. He was very big on frozen vegetables, and it was curious because he was one of the few people, and for a young man, you might think this is unusual, who made his own salad dressing. You know, that was very important to him, to make his own vinaigrette. But when it came to a fresh versus a frozen vegetable, frozen. They're convenient. You can just eat as much as you want. They don't go bad on you. They don't get old, you know. So he was very insistent about that.
Now, what we eat and when we eat alone seems to be really antithetical to the principles of the slow food movement, where we eat farmers market food and we prepare it over, you know, the time that it takes to actually prepare it and then eat it slowly with our beloved friends and family. This is more like taking something out of the freezer at 10 o'clock. And
not necessarily, actually. There is a lot of that, and there are a lot of really creepy things, you know, that people do that you know, you would never share with your friends, you'd never serve to anybody else, that really are quite disgusting, really. They show an incredible lack of self-respect to even consider eating such things. But that wasn't the whole portrait. There are many people who kind of value their own company enough to bother to cook something, including a farmer's market salad, which was one of our interviewees was just thought nothing of it. She says, well, of course I do that. And there was all the food on her counter as she spoke. So it goes both ways. And I think that the idea of slow food might not be so much eating slowly or cooking slowly or spending a lot of time, but connecting the process of feeding oneself with a sense of pleasure and a sense of self-respect, that you can sit down at the table and enjoy a meal and a glass of wine as opposed to wolfing something down over the sink, you know.
What do you think is the grossest recipe or confession, whatever you want to call it.
Oh, I have it. Yeah, it's easy. It's margarita mix over bread.
Ladies and gentlemen, this book can be yours if you call right now, 428-1393. It's called What We Eat When We Eat Alone, Deborah Madison, and wonderful drawings and illustrations by Patrick McFarlane. When you were last here and we talked about this book, I confessed that mine was fried bananas over rice, but I realized that usually when I make that, I do share it with somebody. And so I wasn't really quite honest, and I think the honest one is popcorn with butter and Parmesan cheese.
That sounds good.
It is good.
Yeah, there you can do wonderful things with popcorn. You know, you could do it with smoked sea salt or with smoked paprika or, you know, Indian spices. Good old butter and salt's pretty nice too.
And if it's organic popcorn, you think that maybe you're not doing something that's all that unhealthy compared to, say, a bag of Bugles or Fritos.
Well, yeah, or a can of Hormel chili over nacho, over Fritos, and put in the toaster oven with a bunch of cheese on it. You know, there's some things like that. That was a woman's idea, by the way. Not a man, even though it sounds sort of like greasy men's food.
Did you find that there was a gender breakdown between the kinds of things that men and women did, or not so much?
There was and there wasn't. I mean, there's certain things. Men tend to repeat things more often. A man might seriously cook, like a flank steak that's stuffed with bacon and cheese and mushrooms. This is actually a recipe in the book from a bartender in town, rolled it up and grilled it. And we made that. It served six of us at dinner. So obviously he is probably eating on it for, I don't know, two or three nights anyway. We'll give him that. Or a leg of lamb is not going to be eaten in a very short amount of time. But actually, often men were the more sensitive and serious cooks, whereas women, who often have to cook all the time for families, you know, when they were finally alone, oh boy, carbs and salt. You know, it could be potatoes with caramelized onions and sour cream, or fried potatoes and olive oil with a yogurt feta sauce from a Greek friend of ours, or simply oatmeal with, you know, Maldon sea salt on top.
Well, breakfast for dinner, I think, is always fabulous.
I do, too.
Do you really?
Oh, absolutely. And I just recently read an article in some magazine about breakfast for dinner, and it's such a comfortable fallback kind of position, because breakfast is a comfort. Even though we're starting the day, there's some breakfasts that are comforting in their familiarity. We know what pancakes are like, or French toast. There's not big surprises there. And if they are, they're usually delicious surprises. So there's something very nice about, hey, let's just have a fried egg on toast for breakfast, or a fried egg sandwich, or I'll make some waffles and cut up some fruit, you know.
For
breakfast or dinner, yeah. And when you do it for dinner, it's kind of this revelation, like, oh, we can really enjoy this for dinner. We don't have to run off to something. You know, it's nice. I think a lot of people actually do that, and they could do it more, especially if they turn to eggs, because there's nothing faster than a scrambled egg. You know.
We're talking to Deborah Madison. Once again, the number is 428-1393. What We Eat When We Eat Alone is the name of the book. Since we last talked to you, it's been some months, and I'm wondering how the book is doing. I would think it would be a runaway bestseller.
I don't think it's quite that, but we're happy to say that it's gone back for a second printing, and it was a generous first one, so something's happening with it, and it got picked up by the London Guardian, and that sort of spurred a number of interviews in other countries, Brazil and Spain. Germany is interested in doing a German version of it. So,
nice.
Yeah, it's sort of getting legs of its own.
It would be interesting to see what happened if each country did a What We Eat When We Eat Alone. In other words, what did the Hungarians eat when they eat alone, or the Balinese or whatever?
Sure.
Well, the Balinese never eat alone, but
there probably are countries where people seldom eat alone.
Yeah. Interesting. Deborah Madison, why should people call right now and contribute to KSFR?
Oh, because this is a very important radio station, because you do these amazing interviews with all kinds of people all the time. It's really a fresh radio station with intelligence that is a pleasure to listen to.
Well, I thank you for being on it, and thank you for your wonderful book, What We Eat When We Eat Alone, Deborah Madison and Patrick McFarlane. We'll see you at the New Mexico Women Authors Book Festival at 3 o'clock on Saturday.
Yes, we will. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
428-1393 is the number for the pledge drive, and people are calling. Keep calling. You can get these. I think we're actually going to have a few more of each book, so you can get a copy of any of the books that you have heard or will hear by calling and making a contribution to KSFR, 505-428-1393. 428-1393. Please support women authors. Please support literature. Please support the KSFR, and please support the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. Let's keep going. I'm very happy now to welcome Nancy King. She is a fiction writer. She's the author of the new book, The Stones Speak. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. And before we talk, I know it's the on-air fundraiser, so I'd like to give you my check.
Thank you so much. I'm holding it in my hand. You can hear it flapping. Thank you so much, Nancy.
KSFR really means a whole lot to me. And I remember when Bush was getting selected, and one of the radio announcers said, "Folks, the news is too grim. Turn off your radio and go take a hike in the mountains." And I felt like it was my neighbor talking to me, giving me something that I needed at the time. And I did exactly that. Turned off the radio and walked into the mountains. And I felt a whole lot better, even though the situation didn't change.
And then you turned the radio back on.
I did, for your shows, of course, and some of the others.
Well, thank you very much. Let that be an example to you, dear listeners. 428-1393 is the number. Please call now, make a contribution to KSFR, and you can get a copy of any of the books that we're talking about today. We've got, I think we have one of each, so I don't know which ones are gone yet, but Nancy's novel is called The Stones Speak, and this is something that is perhaps not your usual fiction in that it's the story of a friendship between women.
Right. And when the man comes in, instead of the man going, oh, I won't say anymore.
Oh, come on.
Well, I'll tell you. I get tired of reading novels where if there is an older woman in the novel, she's a grandmother, she's a wife, she's a mother, and it's all about her role relationships. And I really wanted to read a book about women qua women. Successful women who are making their way in the world and who are asking important questions, who are sexual beings, who are fully engaged in life. And so the novel is not about the roles that they may play. It's about the women as human beings.
And their questions, their changes, the issues in life that they're addressing.
That's right. And one of them is invisibility. When you get to be over 40 and you're a woman, it's like you should fade into the woodwork and have no part in the world. You certainly shouldn't think about sex or life or meaning or anything else. And I actually resent that. And I
well,
think
it's such a categorizing of women as basically childbearing units and no more.
Right. The roles they play are what's important, not who they are as individuals.
So, and what their much larger contribution is.
That's right. And, I mean, I know plenty of women in their 80s who are skiing and active in politics and active, leading active lives, but you don't read about them very often. You don't see their faces. I get a twinge when I see all this anti-aging stuff and the model is an 18-year-old.
Right.
In fact, I wrote to one magazine and I said, well, why don't you show a woman in her 70s? Who's been doing right by herself, eating well, you know, exercising well. Why not that?
Yeah.
But that doesn't happen unless it's a magazine devoted to older women.
And it's particularly an American, you know, United States phenomenon. I was watching some BBC detective show, and the protagonist was a woman in her late 50s, and she was out there solving the murder.
Right.
And I thought, you'd never have that on a detective show here.
That's right. That's right.
So back to your book.
Yes.
Friendship. There's also, I have to say it, being the dog lover that I am, there's a dog.
Yes, there is. And I should tell you that every writer writes differently. They all have different. And for me, it's like turning on a theater in my head. It's like I turn on this picture in my head and then the characters appear. Now, I am not a dog lover. I do not write about dogs. Frankly, I'm sorry to tell you this, I don't care much about dogs, although dogs tend to like me.
You were in a minority in this town, I'm just saying.
Yes. Anyway, so much to my surprise, the Naomi, a woman in her 60s, is hiking up Atalaya, and she has met a man hiking on the trail, and she's enthusiastic about him, and they take a short little rest, and I'd like to read a short passage. A rough tongue licking her face awakened Naomi, as did a loud voice shouting, "Beetle, come here." Either Beetle was deaf or he didn't care. The large black dog didn't move. He kept nuzzling Naomi as if she were a long-lost friend. Caught between annoyance and pleasure, she stroked the dog's face. He took immediate advantage by licking all of her exposed skin. Beetle's owner, a tall, lanky man with a gray ponytail, rushed over to her and tried to pull the dog away. Beetle did his best to ignore him. "I'm sorry, I never saw him act like this before," said the man. "Maybe we were lovers in past lives," said Naomi, sitting up. "Yeah, right," he sneered, struggling to get his dog away from her. "I don't mind. A little loving, what could be bad?" Naomi didn't much like dogs, especially those that approached and licked without an invitation, but Beetle's attention was making the black hole inside her smaller. She surprised herself again by hugging the dog. Beetle's owner shifted from being concerned about Naomi's welfare to establishing who was boss. At least for the moment, Beetle, with Naomi's support, was winning. And then the man she's been talking to comes up and he says, "You better keep your dog on his leash. He might not always be so friendly. If your girlfriend would mind her own business, Beetle would come when I call her like he always does. She's not my girlfriend. Whoever she is, she needs to butt out where she doesn't belong." The two men glared at each other. More sensibly, Beetle wagged his tail, straining toward Naomi. And the tension builds, and Naomi's trying to diffuse it. And, you know, no trouble, but the two men are just testosteroning. And so finally...
Oh, wow, testosterone made into a verb.
It seemed the most graphic way to describe it. Anyway, she can't get them to stop, so she starts walking down the trail. And she hears this frustrated yell, "Beetle, come back here." And she turns around, and she sees Beetle loping happily toward her. "Go back, Beetle," she called, but he trotted on, leash slithering after him, matching her stride, seemingly delighted. After having to unsnag his leash one too many times, Naomi wrapped it loosely around his neck, freeing him to run and leap. At first she walked slower than usual, hoping Beetle's owner was more concerned about his dog than in confronting the man, but when she saw no sign of him, she resumed her normal pace. It wasn't until they were a third of the way down the mountain that she began to wonder what would happen if Beetle's owner accused her of dog napping. And what about Amos? That's the man she met. Why wasn't he more interested in her than some stupid power struggle more suitable to 8-year-olds and grown men? Beetle tripped Naomi, deliberately. Running in front of her, he stopped short and looked up as she fell. Although she was in no mood to be licked, he gave her no choice. His joy was contagious. She wrapped her arms around him and he snuggled close, seemingly as hug-deprived as she felt. She refused to think how silly they must look, a big black dog and a small white woman, blissfully entwined in the middle of a narrow mountain trail. "Beetle!" Naomi jumped up and Beetle ran off before she could grab his leash. "Beetle!" The angry voice grew louder and more insistent. She contemplated hiding, but no tree looked large enough. Frightened, Naomi decided to run.
We're talking to Nancy King. Her book is called The Stones Speak, and we're just about out of time, but I just find it fascinating that for you, the author, being a non-dog lover, that this dog just literally, I mean, the way it jumps into the story, it kind of jumped into your creative process.
That's right, and let me tell you, the dog would not jump out. It kept coming back, and it turns out that the dog is the catalyst in this novel for all the changes that these two women and the man make in their lives.
Now, why should people get on their telephone right now and call 428-1393, besides to get a copy of your book?
Because I think KSFR is an amazing station. It's very responsive to the community. It supports the community, and it feeds the community. And people like me would never have a chance to be on the radio and talk about their books, but it's a community-focused station, and I think it's just marvelous.
428-1393 is the number. Nancy King, thanks for being with us. And she will be at the New Mexico Women Authors Book Festival at 3:30 on Saturday. 428-1393 is the number, 428-1393 in the area code 505. If you're calling from out of area, it's 866-907-5737. That's 866-907-KSFR.
Call now. Please support this station. Please support my show. And as I said before, please support literature and women authors. I've been told that there aren't a whole lot of people, really, even in public radio stations, that have authors on the air that read their books, that talk to them, and that make their work available through the format of radio to the public. If that's something you like, if that's something you care about, please support the station, because it's the only way we stay on the air, and it's the only way you get to keep hearing it. 505, I'm going to say it slowly, 428-1393. Okay, let's go on.